Welcome to this episode of the Friday Pod. This was a really interesting discussion. We started off talking about what it is to build networks and relationship and told some remarkable stories in the past week or two of some pretty interesting stuff, like me going to Athens, meeting up with a very interesting human being that I've become really, really close to really quickly. How that happened, why that happened, the importance of building relationships and actually how to do it. We basically looked back on our own lives over the last 2-3 years and reveal some of the behind the scenes connections that have happened as a result of learning to frame ourselves better and then document our journeys. And we share with you real stories that are happening right now in real time that basically turn into money and a better life. So watch that. The second half of the pod, or the last quarter of it more accurately, we talked about what can go wrong with Bitcoin treasury companies, and there's a lot of hype around it right now. They're the number one stocks in most of the stock markets around the world, but we sort of take the other side of the argument and point out all the ways that you could actually get wrecked by investing in these stocks as well. So with that said, let's get into it. Remember, guys, like and subscribe. Still, only about 60% of people who watch the videos actually subscribe to them. So subscribe and make sure you hit the notification bell so that you get notified whenever a new episode comes out. Thanks, guys. Bye for now. All right, guys. So I woke up the other day and this clip that many of you saw went a bit viral on the Daily Mail, which was kind of weird. It's interesting, a reminder of how big some of these sites are, because I got all of these messages from all over the world. And I wanted to just share something at the top of the pod for everybody listening to this, which was that clip, which where I spoke about, you know, people turning their houses into hotels, their bodies into porn and all that sort of stuff. That clip, by the way, just came out of a book called The Tao of Bitcoin, but they clipped it. So it looked like I was taking credit for the quote. It wasn't my quote. But what was interesting, that podcast, I agreed to go on to with a couple in Australia. It's a tiny, tiny podcast. Like, they literally have like 50 followers on their Instagram. And I said, yeah, sure, they're followers of our pod. They asked me, hey, would you come on our podcast? And I just said, yes. So I just wanted to remind everybody out there, you know, that always say yes is a real thing. You know, I said, yes, this lovely couple, somehow the Daily Mail picked it up. I asked them, did you guys, you know, contact Daily Mail? You have a PR team or no? They said no. It just hit off on our tiny little channel. And the next thing you know, I woke up, I was in Athens, and I woke up in the morning to just a barrage of messages from all over the world, including from the Daily Mail seeking comment. And it came out of a tiny little podcast with a couple that literally had 47 followers on their Instagram page when I went to actually check them out, which was nuts. And I didn't look till after, I just did the pod. So really interesting. Hey,
how many followers do they have now?
I don't know. I haven't looked.
9,000. And can you give us some? What was the main sentiment overall? If you were to break it down into maybe 3 or 4 top variables.
Oh, just that clip that the Daily Mail picked up on. I basically recited a quote out of the book The Tao of Bitcoin that hit me right in the face when I read the book, and I wrote it down. And it said, because of inflation. Sorry, James, am I answering the question? No.
I said, with the barrage of inbound that you got, what was the basic sentiment of the responses or messages?
Just people going, oh, holy shit, dude, I saw you on the Daily Mail. And I'm like, is there an overlap between Daily Mail readers and our readers, which is pretty surprising to me, but they're pretty pervasive, these platforms. So, yeah, so
So next thing we know, we're going to see photos of Adam sunbaking naked on a yacht in Cyprus, I reckon, on the Daily Mail. You've made it now, bro.
Spotted Adam Hudson on his summer holidays.
That's it. So with his new fully blasted back with some Cypriot, like, sign on there.
Bitcoin fat.
Bitcoin sticker.
The other thing is, you know, I shave my head, as you guys can see here, right? Like a lot of people follow us on Instagram. And one of my followers texted me this. I don't know if you can see it on YouTube, but can you see?
For those of you guys that are listening, it's literally Adam with his shirt off, with a shaved head, with a massive Bitcoin tattoo on his shoulder, kind of going up his neck.
It looks like he's one of the Comancheros at the gym, ready to pick up a kilo of coke and drop it off somewhere. You know,
you guys out there want to know when the Bitcoin top is in? I'm calling it now. When Adam gets that Bitcoin tattoo, that's the fucking sell.
That's the sign. Anyway,
you know what? You know what these news agencies are doing really well is through social media.
Going out of business?
You go, but you go on Facebook or you go on Instagram. A lot of them have, you know, sponsored ads and stuff through social. So they got great hooks, right? And obviously you'll click through. So I'm assuming some people would have found it through there as well. Because I'm definitely not checking Daily Mail on a daily basis.
Yeah, just shows you. Like I've had a couple of times where I've just been on TV for 5 seconds or something, and you realize when that happens, how many people still watch mainstream stuff. It's just crazy. The size of these sites is huge.
Eric, don't lie. I heard your PR team contacts Daily Mail every day, sends them one of your clips.
I'll tell you right now, Perry, one of the first things he did was reach out to that editor and say, hey, if you want more of that, contact us here. Here's our details. That's exactly what he did today.
Well, that's a legend.
What you need to do, right? Yeah. Try. Man, like we say, attention is the new currency. You just don't know, right? And like what Adam said, good thing I was wearing the hat. Right, like he was wearing the unemployable hat. So people are going to look at that unemployable. They might type in unemployable on Google, on YouTube, or something, and that's how people are going to find you. You know, you can't sell a secret. And like Adam said, I think it's definitely part of the plan for all of us. What we should be doing is getting on more pods. Definitely, whether they're 50 followers or 50,000 followers, doesn't mean that the 50,000 followers are going to get the Daily Mail plug. You know?
Yeah, it is. It's super powerful, Matt.
Just something small, not as big as the Daily Mail, but I did Tony's pod, Empowered Man, which I think you guys have done as well. And I don't think it blew up or anything like that, but I had one guy message me, and it was like such a heartfelt, like just show-stopping, just stopped me in my tracks, the message. And I just thought the thing that I was left with is, geez, like if I've only impacted one person in this way, then it's more than worthwhile. Yeah. Because it obviously hit them at a place that, you know, was where they're at, and it made an impact in their lives. And so just to hear that feedback was pretty special. So it's like, yeah, you should always, like Adam said, you should always say yes, because if it's even just one person out there that hears your message and they resonate with it, then you can literally change lives, you know, one by one.
And yeah, you should. And if you're starting a little pod, you should always ask too. The inverse of that, like this. But these are young, a lovely couple that run that pod, and I looked on their pod. I didn't even check out who they were. They just said, "I follow you guys, and we're starting our pod." And I just said yes. And when I jumped in their channel, they also just recently had Daniel Priestley on, who was on Diary of the CEO recently with Stephen Bartlett. And you know, people don't realize the connectivity, because I've now been on that pod. I could easily say, "Hey, could you guys connect us with Daniel Priestley?" And then when we're connected with Daniel Priestley, we're one degree of separation from the producers of Diary of the CEO. That's how connected it is. This week I've got pods happening with all kinds of interesting people as a result of me just simply reaching out proactively. You know, that's the way these things work. But moving on from that, guys, I just want to share one other quick thing that I think be interesting for people. I had a terrific weekend in Athens just this last weekend, and I connected with Tony Yazbek from the Bitcoin Way, and that's partly what inspired me to shave my head. He was like, "Do it, man, shave your head." Like, Tony's totally bald. And it was actually a really cool thing, because I was coming home from another country, and I was just texting with him, and he had some hardware. I'm setting up a Bitcoin node here at home. And he said, "I've got a Bitcoin node here for you. You know, why don't you drop by Athens and we'll hang out?" I was like, "You know what? I got to go by somewhere. I might as well go by Athens. So I flew into Doha, then over to Athens. And I spent 2 nights with him and his partner. And it was just, you know, really kind of a cool thing. It was one of those things where that's what I've been trying to set up for a while now. It's just making myself available to go and do and meet interesting, inspiring people. And we're sitting there on the rooftop of a hotel in Athens at about 9 o'clock, watching the sun go down. We had an incredible meal together and just talking about the, you know, life. And then we ended up at a cigar bar at this incredible hotel in the city. And we did it 2 nights in a row. And yeah, it was just a really cool experience that, you know, that I think it's really valuable to make time and effort for if you can. And I think all of us can take a lot from just reaching out and doing something out of the way with somebody, you know, that you really care about. So yeah, I just want to encourage people to sort of have those experiences.
It's always the way, like It's crazy how there's so many times where I haven't kind of wanted to go to an event, or I haven't wanted to do something, I haven't wanted to do this thing because I'm like, it's going to be average. And then it's always that event that you didn't really want to go to that you then meet someone and you're like, oh my God, that, like, that you just connect and you just hit it off with that person on a level that is different to the everyday kind of back and forth chit chat that you have when you meet people. And you're like, fuck, I'm so glad I went to that event, because that person, that connection is so much more important. And yeah, I just think that's really cool, man. Like, it's those kind of connections, and it's those kind of link ups and meetups where you're sitting across from someone and you're like, you know, your kindred spirits, or you've got some sort of connection with this person that you wouldn't have otherwise had if you didn't kind of go out of your way.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty cool doing it too. It's like, it's not like you're sort of just going and zipping up for Brisbane for the night or whatever. You're flying across half different cultures, different cuisines, the whole shebang to catch up with a mate. So it'd be a bit of an adventure.
Yeah,
It's the amazing thing about Europe. You've got so many countries and so many cultures within such close proximity. That's, I think, the romance of wanting to kind of live in Europe.
Yeah. For some time, we spent three hours to get to Melbourne.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's really halfway across Europe.
Speaking of networking, Adam, I've rekindled that relationship with your mate. I probably shouldn't say it that way. I already know James is going to fucking, you know. Rekindle that relationship with James, just in regards to the whole funds and whatnot for Unemployable. And I have a meeting up this week, next week, with him and a guy named Sean, and he's responsible for raising funds, and they've raised and placed over $15 billion with a capital B dollars worth of funds in different types of startups, and obviously other fund managers and whatnot. And also caught up this week with Jason. No, sorry, last week with Jason from Voice Capital, which was the other Jason he wanted us to meet. Remember, we had that guy from Cake Equity here. And some of the stuff that these guys are doing, like, they're literally moving and shaking. He was showing me photos of him with the royal family at the F1 in Abu Dhabi. He's in the same, you know, limo in the same box with Evander Holyfield, taking photos, just hanging out. And it's just so interesting, the amount of people that you can meet. But again, the key is reaching out and following up. That's one of the things that I told a coaching client this week. He's like, hey, you've inspired me to start networking more. I said, okay. He's like, I'm going to an entrepreneur's catch up this week. There's about 30 people there. I'm like, that's cool. And then I'm like, so what are you going to do, right? When you meet, you know, 15 out of the 30 people or 20 out of the 30 people, how are you going to document that information, right? And this is for people to think about. How are you going to remember who is who? I'm like, what you need to do, because you're not used to this, right, is document them. So when you're talking to them, right, document notes after you talk to them, who they are, what they do, how they connect. And then what you got to do is create a spreadsheet of some kind. You can't just put their contact in your phone, because you put 30 contacts in your phone, you're going to forget who's who. What you need to start creating, what people need to start creating, is a database of some kind, right? Like their own personal CRM, as an example, where they can quickly do and search. For instance, if you're searching, you know, funds, you know, capital, these types of things, Bitcoin or what, you can go and go, oh, these are the 15 people that I've met in the last 6 months about, oh, I remember that guy. Oh, that's the Adam Hudson guy. I met him, you know, in Cyprus, you know, getting that back tattoo, as an example, that, you know, these types of things, right? Because what happens is people take business cards get left on a table. They then go into the junk drawer and it's gone, right? You need to start documenting these things.
That's so good, Eric. When I was in Prague, what was sort of commonly happening at booths is I would get someone's contact information, then I would take a selfie with them and their brochure and attach that to their file, in like their contact in my phone. Then I would send myself an email. So all the people that featured in that Bitcoin Prague video with me, I photographed myself with them with the brochure and then put their contact information. Then I text them and email them a copy of the Prague video when it went live on our channel, because I want to grow the channel in Europe. And each one of those has got a stand with hundreds and thousands of people coming through their stand. And then they see this piece of content that I made, like the Bitmart guys who run the ATM, second biggest ATM network, Bitcoin ATM network in Europe. they were stoked. Like they hit me back going, holy shit, we should have got more content. Like you made this piece of content with Ricard and they punched it out. And so, and of course I'm wearing the unemployable hat. So it's having a process for this stuff. I just want to encourage a real thing for people because I struggle with this still. Even now, I struggle with this. And when you, Eric, talk about that guy, there's a very simple saying I want everyone to hear, which is never ascribe to malice what can otherwise be described by ignorance. So never ascribe to malice what can otherwise be ascribed to ignorance. The point of that statement is a lot of us suffer from imposter syndrome and we'll reach out to somebody like at the moment, we're trying to get somebody on the pod, which I said last week was locked in. It was locked in, but all of a sudden I can't reach the guy. Like, you know, we were texting and communicating and now he's ghosting me. And he's a big, like, internationally famous guy that agreed to come on the pod. Now, this never ascribed to malice, what can otherwise be ascribed to ignorance means rather than assume, oh, he's gone cold on you, he's not interested in you, all the story and narrative that runs in your head, just assume they haven't seen the email or they got busy or whatever else. And the minute you start doing that, you start to, you know, lose the fear of people not wanting to say yes to you being on the pod. Like that couple that asked me onto their pod, I'm sure they were kind of like, oh, shit, he's probably going to say no. Why would he come on our tiny pod? Like all the normal stuff. And I just said yes, right? Like people will say yes. So just that, and that overcoming that fear is absolutely massive in so many areas of life.
That,
you know,
that, and I'll add one more thing as well. And this is something that I've had to learn, and it's hard because again, of the imposter syndrome and fear of judgment. But when you are going to networking events and you know you're meeting people, right? What is your elevator pitch, right? How are people going to remember you? Right. And what Adam has taught me when we first started Unemployable is like, you've got a great story that nobody knows, but you need to frame yourself. And I use that word over and over and over and over again now with framing, right? You gotta tell your story so people remember who you are. And like this guy that I'm coaching, you know, he was top 10 in this group of companies out of 2,500 people. I'm like, mate, you were high up in this thing and nobody knows that, right? So when you're going to these networking events and you're introducing yourself, don't just introduce yourself as your first name and what do you do? Oh, I'm in this industry. Go deeper than that, right? Like if you start framing yourself, people are going to start going, holy shit, right? Like some of my frame is, hey, I'm Eric. Oh, what do you do? Oh, I'm involved in, you know, a large scale e-com business where, you know, we do over $100 million. Like straight away, right? I repeat that. And I feel like a wanker at times because of the imposter syndrome, but that is a frame, right? I'm Eric and I'm doing X amount of developments in real estate and I've made X amount. Like it's a frame. If you're going to a real estate event, that's the angle. If you're going to an e-com event, that's the angle.
Never been able to do that, man. Like I'd kind of admire people who are able to go into events like that and frame it and get contacts and take names. Like I can never do it. I'm like, yeah, hey, Mark. Like I have imposter syndrome big time when it comes to that kind of thing.
When you've got a business doing $100 million bucks a year, so it takes away probably the bit of imposter syndrome though as well. Like it's a pretty big.
It almost makes it harder, I reckon. Like because it's a big thing to say I'm doing $100 million a year because the judgment against a statement like that or Mark saying I blitz the S&P by a factor of 10. Like A players are going to go, fuck, tell me more. And losers are going to say, what a wanker. And it's a great fucking polarizing statement. Yeah. But it is.
And there's more losers. There's more losers than A players. That's the reality. But when you're going to these networking events, it's a different type of caliber of people. It depends where you go. It depends who you're talking to, right? You need to be like, and this is what I'm saying. I'm teaching my daughters right now. I'm like, it's all about the approach, right? Because you know, talking about attitude and this and that, like think about the approach. We need to be chameleons, right? We need to know in what rooms that we're being in and what should be discussed and what shouldn't be discussed, right? I'm not going to go into, you know, an event where I know that there's going to be, you know, C players there and I'm going to be trying sitting on my high horse going, hey, this is who I am. But if I'm going into a proper, you know, if Adam's going into Bitcoin Prague as an example, and he wants to get in with the Michael Saylors of the world and these types of people, he's going to be talking like I know a little bit about Bitcoin. Well, actually, you know what? I've put in over 2,000 hours of education into this. Like, that sets somebody apart, because I'll tell you right now, no one else on this pod has put 2,000 hours of yeah, maybe you, Mark, but, you know, like, I surely haven't. So, but that frames me right now going, whatever in my mind, right, as a friend, I'm not saying this, that Adam knows everything, but that gives me more conviction to listen to Adam, right? Because that for me, that gives him relevance in that space. That gives him credibility in that space. And there's a reason why people chime into Unemployable Media, is because we're creating relevance. Some might get on with me and like my angle. Some will love Mark, some will love James, some will love Adam. But the reality is, we all have a story. Like, I didn't know you sold 3,000 blocks of land. When you told me that initially the first time, I looked at you differently, Mark. Right? That's the reality. I looked at you differently. If you came to me and said, I've sold 30, who cares? 3,000. I can work out 3,000 times, you know, $300,000 to $500,000 a lot, times X percent, times, like, this guy's made some cash. He's actually, he's done stuff, right? When you're telling me the other day, when you were vulnerable with, I forget who we were with, and you were telling us how much actual money that you're playing with in the market live right now, I'm like, this guy's serious, right? It's not, you know, he's not playing with 50 grand. He's not playing with 10 grand. He's playing with a good chunk of money to go, holy shit, the conviction. This, and I know you're a family man, you have kids, you know, you've got people to take care of. And that's what I mean about that framing. So it's a whole package together where I'm great at networking, right? But I was pretty shit at framing until I started Unemployable Property. To give you an example, every podcast I'm framing Shannon and Carson going, 4 years ago, this guy was cleaning carpets. 4 years ago, this guy was driving an excavator. Now they are doing over $100 million worth of deals, which is even more now, because some of the stuff that they're working on makes me feel like down here, and they're like, and I'm like, shit, I got to catch up, man. I got to pick up my game. And that's what we want.
Can I ask you a question? Do you think it's like a bit of a numbers game as well? Like, I remember once there was this guy, Chris Burt, he was a property developer, and I learned heaps from him through watching him and how he went about dealing with council, buying sites, etc. And one day we went out to a bar, and both single at the time, and he just had this ability to kind of go up to every single female at the bar and say, g'day, I'm Chris, whatever. And I'm just like, man, how do you do that? He's like, well, he's like, I worked out a long time ago that it's a numbers game. He goes, some people aren't going to like the cut of my jib. Others might. Others will think I'm funny. He goes, but it's a numbers game. He goes, you have to just continually put yourself out there until you find the person that's going to be interested, or the person you hit her off with. Do you think that the same kind of applies in business and networking as well? That there's some people that are just, you're never going to have anything in common with, and you might frame yourself, put yourself out there, and they'll be like, oh, I don't really want to talk to you. Yeah. But then there's going to be others that have that. Is it similar?
I think there's a portion of a numbers game, but I think this is very important for everybody to remember, right? Like, I don't want us going off on a tangent here, but like, we all have a story. That's the reality. We've all been through difficult times. We've all been through the highs and the lows, right? You got to frame your own story. And this is what I tell most clients, right? Is like, sit there and write your story. And to be honest with you, you'll probably write it a lot, right? Just get it out of your brain. Like, what is the history? What have you done? Where have you moved from? Like, you look at Adam's story, right? Like, and what he's, and I'll use Adam as an example, because he's done a lot. He's moved to the US. He's moved back. He's made money. He's lost money. He's in Europe. He sold everything. Like, people are going to go like, fuck, man, that's inspiring, right? Mm-hmm. Never mind money. Put money aside for a sec. Just, this is what I've done, right? Which is quite interesting. So I think, it is a little bit of a numbers game, but I think what you always have to be is real and authentic. Like, James is an example who I was talking about before, that I'm meeting this guy that has raised and placed $15 billion. I've never met a guy like this before, right? And when I met Jason, when he came here, he loves the podcast. He listens to the podcast. He's put me in contact with someone that I got to put you in contact with, who has one of the bigger Bitcoin podcasts. I forget his name, but it's in the email. But I said to Jason, he's talking about capital and he's talking about funds, and I go, Jason, I just want to start with, this whole area is brand new to me. So the way you're explaining it, right, capital, funds, you know, tech space, startup, that whole side is brand new to me. So I'm not sitting there trying to pretend that I know this, because I need to be vulnerable. It's okay not to know everything. They'll respect you more for that, right? But the reason why he's here is because he listens to us, right? He watches the podcast. He likes the Bitcoin podcast. He knew my story, right? So there's probably a little bit of relevance and credibility that was built there. And now the guy that introduced me to him is reaching out to me a couple of days ago, right? And the same day I'm meeting with this guy that's placed his $15 billion, I'm going to a poker night, which Adam's going to get FOMO at the moment. I'm going to a poker night at the top level of an office building, very famous office building here on the Gulf Coast. And it's there's 12 very, very high level entrepreneurs, high net worth. And it's this guy that has a fund. So he's obviously putting it on, food, drinks. It's from 4 p.m. And, you know, there's 2 hours of networking prior to the poker event. Everyone's bringing a couple hundred dollars. And I'm going to get to rub shoulders with people I never met. But again, it starts with understanding your story and your frame. And once you do that, I think that builds more confidence. Right now, people don't know their story. So how are you confident when you haven't even written your story down, right? Like, you look at certain people, like, I've got friends that sit there and go, you know, that used to live in Serbia and Croatia and literally would be on the roof of their houses watching the bombs go over. Like, then they've, you know, removed themselves from that. And now they're in Australia. Like, those are all stories. Like, that's amazing stuff. And that's not even financial. Sometimes it's not all financial. Like, it's not just, oh, I'm the $100 million business guy and I got 100 something employees and blah, blah, blah. Sometimes it needs to go deeper than that.
Yeah, wow, that's great.
Sorry,
good for Aussies. It's really good for Aussies, because Aussies really struggle with just being able to frame their story. And I think the second layer to this is to create the frame and then document, right? Like, actually document what you're doing as well, because that amplifies it. You know, like, when I was there with Tony, having dinner, I didn't just sit there silently. I took a couple of photos. I was smoking a cigar in the best hotel. There's a $4,000 a night hotel. We're having cigars, and I took a couple of photos, put them up, and then now we're talking about the dinner in Athens, and I'm amplifying and sharing inside that experience. Eric's now talking about that poker game, which my mate James is putting together. You know, he's talking about and amplifying. And so I think, and it's such a huge hack that young people have a huge advantage, is this social media used correctly is incredibly powerful. Like that couple that asked me to come on their pod, they now could go through the entire employable, unemployable interview list of people we've interviewed and say, we'd really love to have A, B, and C on. Could you connect us? Easy, done. You know, how did I get, when I was in Bitcoin Prague, saying hello to Prince Philip when I was there, how did that happen? Well, it was a guy called Sean Clark who started a Bitcoin pod called G'day Bitcoin, who helped us launch the Bitcoin channel. And he's the most humble, grounded person. But because he's got a platform and he's amplifying and sharing, he's now connected. When I was walking around the event, I had my business card with me, correspondent for unemployable Bitcoin correspondent. And on there was the QR code, went straight to my interview with Larry Lepard, because in the Bitcoin community globally, he's famous. And as anybody scans that QR code going, holy shit, this guy just interviewed Larry Lepard, I'll go on that pod, right? Like, so you got to learn to play that game. And that's how you get these people on there.
Have you heard of, speaking of this Bitcoin stuff, What Bitcoin Did, the podcast?
Yes.
His name's Danny. Yeah, this is the guy that Jason knows well that I want to connect you with if you haven't been connected yet.
So, no, please do, because What Bitcoin Did put together, that's really interesting, Eric, because they run an event called Cheat Code in Sydney once a year. And it's an English guy that started. He's hilarious. He got on stage. And so my Bitcoin story is I was you know, using Bitcoin to buy drugs back in the day.
Yeah.
So he's an interesting guy. So they run the one of two Bitcoin conferences in Australia, which is where I met Sean Clark for G'day Bitcoin. And Sean connected me with Prince Philip, Larry Lepard, all these big guys. That's how it worked.
But like this is exactly right. So through James, then a meeting with Jason, who I met, right? This is the email, right? So when you talk about framing, right? So, hey, Danny, introducing you both as discussed. So he's already rang Danny saying, hey, heads up, this is what's happening, right? Eric, Danny is the host of What Bitcoin Did, which is one of the best, if not the best, Bitcoin podcasts globally. Danny's based in Queensland. when he's not flying around the world interviewing people. Danny, Eric's part of the Unemployable team, amongst many other things, which is without a doubt one of the best pods in Australia. They've started to weave Bitcoin into the discussions, and I should suggest that they collaborate on a show with you and cross promote. Both good people, and I'm sure you'll have a lot to discuss. Over to you. Like that, then there needs to be action. Right now, I got to go. Shit, I got this email last week. I didn't action it yet. Right. So now I got to action the email, put it in my diary right now, and go introduce Adam. And I know Adam's an animal at this. And next thing you know, he's on this podcast next week, bringing it to you guys. And that is connecting the dots, putting the pieces of the puzzle together. And that's what people need to get better at.
Yeah. We got Jeff Wilson last week from Wilson Asset Management, worth $500 million personally. You know, then this week I'm interviewing John Fitzgerald, who's a famous Australian tennis player, commentator, former MP for Bennelong. He's going to be interviewed this week and released out into the community. But that connection is, you know, I hit John up because he'd reached out a little while ago. I said, John, so I'm just getting back to you now. I've been on the road. I don't know if you saw the interview we did with Jeff Wilson. I sent the Jeff Wilson pod because I knew that John and Jeff would know each other. They're both, you know, eastern suburbs, blue bloods now, you know, in that establishment, same age, all probably know the same people. And then talking to John, he's like, great, you know, I'll connect you with Philip Lower, who's a former governor of the Reserve Bank. And, you know, let's see if we can get him on. I'm like, that's how it works. And a year ago, Eric and I would take anyone as a guest. You know, we'd take the shoemaker down at Broadbeach to come in and talk about how they resell shoes if they wanted to talk to us.
Adam's going to be setting interest rates.
Not a relation to Schumacher, the shoemaker.
No, literally, the guy running the Mr. Minute. But like a year and a half later, you know, you're talking about former Reserve governors, and you're talking to, you know, his friends with two prime ministers who said, oh, they'd love to come on. You know, like, so you're talking about guys who are at the very, very, like, rich listers, the elite of the country, a year and a half later from when we were having people on that literally were running tiny little businesses. You know, and that's how it starts, and you just got to learn to develop
it. I get for people watching who think, you know, like, fuck, I don't know how I would do that. Like, I'm sitting here listening to it and still going, that scares the shit out of me to reach out to these people. Like, I don't know if maybe it's the fear of rejection or whatever it is, but it's just
isn't it odd, the fear of rejection? You've done that many sales. And you'd walk up to anyone to sell still a block of land, but now the still identity's probably shifted a little bit. So
I think it is all identity based. It is. You know, that was my identity when I was a land salesperson, and now I feel like I'm trying to forge this new identity in a sense. And it's like you're in this cross between who your old identity and your new identity. Like, you know, I've made friends with two or three people over the last 18 months, and they've all been people that have kind of reached out to me through either seeing me at Adam's Wealth Building or seeing me on the pod or whatever. And then they've kind of, for whatever reason, felt like they could connect with me. And so they've hit me up and whatever. And, you know, there's people out there, and I'm seeing people out there that, you know, they're trying to go and kind of get me guests for my pod. And I'm just like, how do these people just reach out like that without any fear? And for me, I don't know, just so much harder.
But yeah, I think write your story over the last 5 years, like your new identity, right? Like your new identity really in my eyes since the day I met you has happened from what I can see from the outside in the last 12 months, man. Like 6 months, you've changed. Like Paul, right, who's a good mate of mine that we were talking off camera about, goes, I don't care what anybody says. The person that's grown the most out of this podcast has been Mark. That's what he said to me, right? And on Saturday nights have changed. Saturday night, we're at his house. the girls are cooking beautiful spaghetti bolognese. And there's Paul and I watching Money Markets and Mayhem, which is Mark's podcast on a Saturday night, talking about Bitcoin and Bitcoin treasury companies. I'm like, I sent a video to Mark and I'm like, how Saturday nights have changed. Hey, this is what we're doing on a Saturday night, you know? But again, you probably need to go pen to paper and go, okay, I know your journey started 5 years. When you said, oh, this journey started 5 years ago, I'm like, holy shit, man. I thought you were only doing this for the last, you know, 6 to 12 months. But start documenting, like what Adam says, like you would have made a lot of trades, made a lot of money, But sometimes the best ones are the ones where you lose, because that's where the authenticity comes from. Like when Adam tells his stories, and when telling me his stories, like I this is what I built and I lost it all. That credibility for me is going, like, as a business partner, going, this guy's had it all and lost it all, and now he has it all again. Not many people can do that. That resilience, right, in my mind, frames him to be a pretty fucking solid guy, right, in that space. And, yeah.
It's very cool, guys. So learning to brand. I just want everyone to hear that we all struggle with it, even now. Like when my phone rings and it's someone like a John or like a Jeff Wilson, you know, I get a text from Jeff, you know, hey, can you chat? And I'm like, sure. And then I'm on the phone to this dude, and you think, and totally normal guy, totally lovely. At the end of the pod, he's like, so tell me, like, we'd stop recording. Adam, what's your story, mate? Like, tell me, how did you get to where you are? And he was really, really genuinely curious. And then we talked about Bitcoin for a while. But I'm starting to get better with the imposter syndrome, but I still get it now. You know, I still go, fuck, what am I doing? Like, when John Fitzgerald called, I'm sitting there in Cyprus having breakfast at a hotel, and my phone rings. I don't even know how he got my number, but Sean gave it to him and said, Sean, you know, call this guy. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I know this guy, these people. And it's a very strange feeling, but you just got to keep asking. Sean Clark at G'day Bitcoin is just such a great inspiration to me, because he's just such a normal Aussie, and he's like got set up his podcast studio on the ground floor of his home, just started recording. And like, this dude, when you watch him, you look at who this guy knows now, it's just incredible. And it just started with asking, and I'm watching it, and I see the comments too. I just, you know, saw one last week saying, I don't care what anyone says, Mark's my favorite. And I love seeing that, because I know where Mark came from. And, you know, there's an old quote of like, you know, don't judge somebody by what they have achieved. Judge somebody by what they've had to overcome to achieve what they've achieved, right? And I look at James in the same light. Like, James is fundamentally an introvert, and here he is on a pod. You know, this is not natural for him. And for Mark, I know you've got fucking Greek daddy issues, like Italian daddy issues, like the rest of us, right?
But it's amazing. Like, James, I've known James for quite some time, 8 years, 9 years, whatever it's been, right? And since that, again, at a networking event, right? And here we are so many years later, right? In business together, right? Like doing a proper development together. And it's my first time working with James. You've worked with James in the past, Adam, right? So it's my first time literally working day to day. We're on the phone every day. We're messaging. Hey, we're pushing. And now I get to see what level he works at, right? Like, I get to see how his brain works. I get to see how, you know, and it's so interesting, right? Like, it's just
interesting in a good way.
No. Like, get shit done, right? Like, right. But I mean, you think very fast, obviously, but I think we all know that. But the thing is, that's you, right? But you push the project, like, you push things, you get shit done, like legit. When I'm, this is a little bit of a side note. This is James, okay, to a T. I'm gonna tell you something. This is James to a T. So I got my microphone. I come to the studio. Right. And we have our panel of four. So instead of me doing it at home and stuff, I'm like, you know, I'm just going to come to the studio and do these Friday pods. So I got my mic, I've got my headphones, I've got my camera, I've got another little light, and I've got this little USB stick. So there's cores everywhere. So when I'm done this pod, I pack up, I grab the mic, I grab the camera, the light, and my headphones, and I plop it on my desk. Anyways, James comes in to do some work. I'm in the studio. He's outside in the office part. He's on the phone getting stuff done, and then I'm leaving. And so while James has been working, he's literally grabbed the mic, he's grabbed the, and he's wrapped the cords ever so tightly in a little bow, in a little knot, and it's literally like perfect. That's James. Like, his spreadsheets, I'm like, hey, James, do you have that Google folder or do you have that document? Yeah, let me share the screen. And his, like, my Google Drive is quite good. But let me tell you, Matt, like, the organizational skills that this guy has is on another level.
It can be crippling to a personal partner, I can tell you that much.
if you ever get invited to dinner at James's place and James is cooking, say yes. Because James is an incredible cook, right? Like, a legit good cook. But what's amazing is watching him work is, like, it's spotless. By the time the plates hit the fucking table, the kitchen's immaculate. There's nothing, like, it's clean.
when you pump those qualities through ChatGPT and that prompt Mark gave to us all, it doesn't always come out gleaming, that's for sure. It's like perfection to avoid fucking, you know, the shining light beaming on all your other imperfections and whatnot. So it can be a massive decoy. So, and like, back to Mark for a second there, I actually text him nearly every Saturday saying, listen to your pod, think it's great. And I've known Mark for 15, 16 years or more now. And just to watch him just shine, especially when it comes to these pods and the way he articulates stuff and communicates it to other people's, it's pretty unbelievable. So,
all the watchers, I just want you to notice something that's sitting in plain sight that most people might not notice. But look at Mark right now on the camera. He's made an investment. You don't look, that screen is not by accident. Like, he's got the bookshelf, he's got the lighting, he's got the microphone. Like, he's made an investment into content. And he's made, and because he realizes the value of this, and most people don't see it. They don't understand the investment. And that's why if you look at my screen right now and you've got the orange light in the background, you've got the TV, you've got a little bit of an attempt at a set. The reason that is because of Mark. I watched Mark level up and I went, shit, I've got to get my game up. So I jumped in a car and drove up to Nicosia, which is where you get all the good stuff in Cyprus. And I went in there and grabbed the light and grabbed the dirt. I've got a light over here, got the light behind, and I studied and I up-leveled my camera because I'm up. So this is the thing about getting around good people and about, you know, working in teams. I just want to just change gears quickly. So Mark, go ahead.
Just to put a bow on it all, thanks, boys. Like, I appreciate the kind words and the feedback. And, you know, I think, you know, you don't know how much that means to kind of hear those things, because you're out there working away and you're not sure if you suck or and you might suck initially, it doesn't matter, but you slowly put one foot in front of the other and you get better and better each day. But, you know, if you're in circles and you see a mate or you see a friend, you know, trying to have a go at something online, you know, and maybe they're not so good to begin with even, right? Like, but just get behind them if they're your friends or they're your family member or whatever. Get behind them and let them know that you see them and they're doing a good job, because I don't think you can really underestimate the power of a kind word sometimes. So appreciate that, boys. Thank you very much.
Amen.
And with that, guys, like, I do this with these guys on the pod. Like, they're my best friends, right? And so when I first was encouraging Eric to create content, whenever he put a piece of content up, I would say, mate, this is great. Do more of this, even if it sucked. I told him it was great, right? Like, and with Mark, no, but I did because, no, but I mean.
No,
like,
I'm joking. No.
But I mean.
I wouldn't be here today doing this if it wasn't for you believing me. Like, and I'm okay saying that. Like, there's no ego in play here. Like, Adam is the one that approached me and said, hey, do you want to do this with me? Because you've got a fucking awesome story. And I'm like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was in that exact say. I was just in behind the scenes, building businesses, investing in property, doing these things. Right. And then he's the one that said, actually, you know what? And let me tell you, it's very, very difficult. If anyone can do it, right? If I can do it, anyone can do it. Cause I'm going in behind, right? Like, one of the best speakers in the fucking country, trying to then be a host of a podcast, right? Going, this guy's like up here on, like, you know, the 15th inning, extra innings. And I'm here on, you know, first base in the first inning. And there was a point where I'm like, shit, I don't know if I can do it. Like, I'm going to be judged. I'm going to be like, I don't have nowhere near the dialogue that this guy has. This guy's got unbelievable memory, right? But again, hearing the feedback from other people and you guys and getting the DMs and stuff like that inspires me. Like you said, a kind word goes a long way. And we're not saying this so I can now go and get DMs and go, oh yeah, I feel good about myself. I'm past that now, right? And I will only get better and better because there's also the constructive criticism that comes back and goes, hey, try this or try that. Or, like, I just seen a comment from a podcast that we released today. And one of the comments was, Eric spoke more than Ravi, which was the guest, right? So in other words, don't talk as much, let the guest talk. I'm like, I'll watch that one back. But that's good constructive criticism, right? Because I know sometimes I can talk too much. Like, so it's good.
Yeah, and you've taken it to like a duck to water. I remember the first couple when Adam had jet off to Cyprus. You had no choice either. It was the fucking deep end, mate. There was no way out of you. Don't look at me.
It was, in my opinion, right, it was either I do it or the podcast probably stops. Like, Yeah. We could do these Friday ones, but the interview ones, like somebody needs to hold the reins. And since then, we've now got unemployable property, which we're just throwing the property in the mix. So, and Shannon and Carson are getting much better, you know, and eventually maybe Carson or someone like that will host those ones. And then they grow into something else. And that's what it's all about here. Right?
Just champion what you want for yourself. You know, like I see Mark, like I've made a real effort to build a relationship with Mark, just little things. Like I follow him on Instagram, and when he posts something that I find inspiring in his story, I'll just take the 2 seconds to say, bro, I love that photo. How cute is Frankie or whatever, because I want to build a relationship with Mark because I can see where he's going. So see where, identify those people and make an effort. And with you guys, we've all deepened our friendship. And when somebody asks you something, so often we're just deaf to the little things. Like when Tony said to me about Athens, hey, look, if he comes through Athens, let me know. So many moments happen like that for us in our life where people just open a door just a tiny little bit and we're not even listening. And I went,
you forget, you forget.
Yeah, I texted him back and I said, Tony, are you going to be in Athens in the next four days? Because I can go through Athens and actually wouldn't mind spending some time with you. And he goes, oh, okay. Like he was so used to inviting and nobody ever does it. And I'm like, no, dude, I'll come. And he's like, really? And then I, like the second dinner, like I found myself, I was on my own. I'm walking up through the back streets of Athens. And I'm like, I'm just took a moment. I'm like, this is so awesome. And I thought I was lost. Like I thought the map had dropped the pin in the wrong spot. And I turned right and it's in the middle of this whole residential precinct. And then there's this one little alley that's on a hill all full of trees and like 3 restaurants and this sick restaurant. And I'm just sitting there with him and his girlfriend and we're just drinking wine and we went down the hill and I just developed a genuine, like, it's like a brother from another mother with Tony. Like I'm super, like, we're super in sync and I feel like I found a friend I'm going to have for life, you know, but just listen guys and observe and try to just check in a real way with people. And it's just so transformative. Like even in a year or in 2 years, that the opportunities that open up and the doors that open up, and it's just getting that, just that little bit sharper and more aware and just putting the good shit out there to the people around you and notice what they're doing and encourage what they're doing. I saw young Sam Hope interview John Howard last week and I sent him a voice note and I said, Sam, I know that you are surrounded by guys that have much bigger followings than you because he's young and he's got some big influencer mates. I said, but let me tell you something, Sam, there's a small group of us that are watching what you're doing and you're building a real social media following. You've only got 3,000 followers, but you just interviewed the former prime minister of our country. Congratulations. Well done for fucking asking the guy and having the balls to follow that through it. He could say, I've done that. He hasn't done anything in business. And he's sitting there with the former prime minister in his offices in Sydney interviewing him.
It's that time of year again at Unemployable, where we're opening up our Unemployable business coaching program. It's over a 12-month period. And with that, you get private one-on-one coaching, group coaching, as well as private and live events throughout the year. You can get private coaching with me, and not only me, but our panel of experts that we have put together. These panel of experts have been in our network and are the exact people that we use in our business successes. People from branding, sales, marketing, our lawyers, our accountants, everyone that has helped build our businesses, you have access to. If this sounds of interest, go to www.unemployable.com.au/coaching and register your interest to see if it's a fit for you and us. Hope to see you there.
And having the balls to interview him. Do you know what I mean? Like knowing that you're going to be judged by going, you're just interviewing the guy that ran the country, right? And knowing that you have a story. Of course he has a story, but it's not a story of I built this business and I'm this wealthy and I've done this. To actually sit there with the confidence, right? And he oozes the confidence. And look at that, for a guy that his frame is very different, right? But his confidence level is like the guy's already a multi 9-figure net worth guy in his mind, right?
But how many people see it and actually take the time to try to connect with him in more than just a like or a little comment? I sent a 3-minute voice note to the guy and that's that. And he came back and just went, holy fuck, Adam, like, thank you for watching and thank you for those kind words. And I just heaped praise on him because he's doing something real in a world where most of the kids are just building.
And that would mean a lot from you because I know how much, right, he looks at you and puts you on a pedestal as a mentor, right, in his life.
And just for a minute, right? Like to be able to kind of lean into someone else's story or to lean into someone else's life and have an impact with a voice message like that or a little comment on their photos or whatever, you have to get out of your own fucking way for a minute and stop worrying about the Epstein, stop worrying about the Epstein files or that politician that you hate, or stop worrying about the shit that's going on that you can't control or affect anyway. And we all do it, right? I'm not pointing the finger at anyone because I do it from time to time. We all do it. We all get into these external things that we just really can't control. And they're just deflections for how we're feeling inside. But if you can get out of your own way for a minute and just listen, like you said, Adam, to that other person's story, there's millions of opportunities to connect that they're just floating by every minute. So, you know, I love being part of these pods and kind of listen to you guys go and riff on these kind of things. And it's part intuition, part experience, part, you know, a bit of everything, but it's, you know, there's some real gold in sitting here and listening to you guys talk about these things.
I'll share two quick things that happened Sunday morning. I was leaving Athens to come home to Cyprus, and I had two voice notes, and I hate voice notes normally, but I got two of them, right? I get a heap of messages. I got two. One was from my friend Wayne. You guys all know Wayne, right? Mm-hmm. So Wayne plays poker with us. And Wayne sends me a voice note, and he said, Adam, I just wanted to take a minute out of my day to just say, I watched that Bitcoin Prague video, and mate, thank you so much. Like, you're not selling anything. You went and carried a camera around the trade hall. You went and introduced yourself to people that you didn't know and asked them to go on camera, and then you did such an amazing job articulating their technology for them for the benefit of others. And he said, and you're really, really good at it now. And he said, I just wanted to take a moment to recognize you for that and say thank you, because you basically put me in the backpack and I was able to experience something I would have never experienced. And I was just like blown away by this voice note. And it didn't come at the end with a, by the way, could you connect me to, it just came with an untethered thank you. And then another woman from Tasmania, I think she's from Tasmania, she said, Adam, I watched the podcast with you boys last week and about your vulnerability that you shared. And I'm an introvert. I basically don't talk to people. I find my connection in life through interactions with birds and with cats. And I'm not good with people, but I get emotional just thinking about like this, how this pod like really reached her. Like, and she said, I'm nervous to even sending this voice note. And I was just like, fuck, like, the fact that she just had the courage and got out of her own way, as Mark said, to actually hold the speaker and send a heartfelt, meaningful note, that's actually what changes. You know, that's what you've got to do. And then you'll find, and then I sent her back a voice note and she said, I live alone. I'm, you know, and it was just a beautiful interaction. You know, her name's Karen, so shout out to Karen. But yeah, anyway, just it's cool, guys.
It's amazing. Like, and it's funny at times, right? Like, I read a message the other day and it was great. They're like, hey, and it was something along the lines of like, Eric, Mark, and James, you guys are great, but Adam, you are like, it was just like, and this is the thing, right? Like, I look at that and I'm like, that's amazing that people can articulate something, go, hey guys, like, you're doing a great job, but Adam, you're the one that really changed my life, and this is why, you know. And like, I look at that, and the reality is, we are all here, right, on this podcast because of what Adam has created in the past. That's the reality, right? We're not here because Mark or because James or because me. It was literally an idea that Adam spun up and was like, hey, I've got this great idea, right? And the names that we were talking about originally, it was hilarious, right? And then I remember, you know, the night of him coming up with this name, Unemployed, I was like, oh my, we were both like, that's the fucking name, you know, like, right. And it's the best because it's an identity. That's what it is, right? We are creating an identity, right? So when people are buying the merch and more people are buying it, they're buying it because it's an identity, right? It's the brand. They want to wear it and people to recognize them as Unemployable. How many times you wear this hat? I wear this hat all the time and people
go, deeper,
that's
Eric.
Me. That's me. It's deep.
Deeper. It's deeper, Eric. It's not just because they want to rep the brand. It's because I genuinely believe that the reason that people buy the hat is because they want to be able to say, hey, I'm part of that community, which, you know, started as Adam's brainchild and is a result of all the things he's always done. Like, people just want to be part of the community in some way, shape or form. And the hat is like a memento. So it's, man, it's well done to you boys as well. I think we just crossed over 22,000 subs.
22,000,
it just keeps growing, right? Like,
I look at YouTube more than I look at my bank account, more than I look at my Bitcoin account, more than I'm more excited about subscribers than I am about increases in Bitcoin and Ethereum and anything else, to be quite honest with you.
Attention is a new currency, and there's a lot of attention inflation out there at the moment. So
let's close. There's one thing I want to talk about before we close, which is, Mark, you'll love this one, because one thing Mark dropped in our group chat this week was, if anybody finds anti-Bitcoin treasury videos, can you send them to me? So people who are making videos saying how Bitcoin treasury companies can blow up, I want to see the other side, because there's all the hype around it. And when in part of my research, I was to aid Mark with that, we found a channel, which I sent through on the group, which basically the guy's done a whole series of videos on how Bitcoin treasuries can, and many will, in his opinion, go wrong. And he's a Bitcoiner. So he's not like an anti-crypto guy or an anti-Bitcoin guy. He's kind of
channel's called Bitcoin University. Like, yes. 257,000 followers. He's pro Bitcoin.
An ex hedge funder who knows how to destroy companies, pretty much, and pointed out all the holes in all these up and coming. So it was interesting, that's for sure.
It's definitely worth watching, guys. And Mark, I might get your take in just a sec, but I want to share something that I found this week, which I thought was really cool, which sort of follows on from Mark's amazing content last week around how he uses ChatGPT. And actually, Mark, that was one of the things Karen texted me this morning. And she said, I use those prompts that Mark talked about. Mm. Oh, my God, I don't feel so alone anymore. It's like this ChatGPT can see into my soul. Those were the words that she used. And this is a woman that finds her joy from connection with a bird or a flower or a cat that might walk by. And that, you know, that's a beautiful way to live as well. But she said, it's sort of spoken to my soul. Anyways, what I discovered was that there's these ChatGPTs, these, what do you call it? Are they called GPTs? You know, like little apps that run in ChatGPT. And it's called Debate Master. So if you look up Debate Master in ChatGPT, there's these GPTs that will actually are designed to debate you. So you can put in your premise that says, you know, like, I watch a guy who does psychology videos on helping men to understand their value in relationships. And he sort of said, look, am I causing more damage than good in the content that I'm doing? How could I be hurting my listeners by advocating for men's rights, right? And the GPT came back, and he actually did a video of him talking with a debate master going through his thesis. And it was really, really interesting. And so I think it'd be interesting to play with for Bitcoin treasuries. But Mark, or James, you know, you've watched some of this stuff. What can go wrong with these Bitcoin treasuries in your opinion?
I'm not the technical macro mark sort of, so I give the best review of the video, but certainly I think Mark coined it last week. They're the new altcoins, apparently. You could coin it that way, where all the money's flowing in there out of the alts into these Bitcoin treasuries, MicroStrategy, Metaplanet, Semler, and those guys been the premier stocks, which will probably weather the storm. But it just went through in a way that these companies that are under funded are going to probably hit some headwind when you have a pullback in the Bitcoin price, because they're fairly well correlated to Bitcoin. But Mark probably explained it a hell of a lot better than I will.
I think the simplest analogy to explain, I think, what the hidden dangers of these strategies are is like James said, it's kind of like all the rage at the moment. It's the new altcoins. It's where retail money is piling in. If you look at the price of Bitcoin over the last 2 months, 3 months, it's pretty much been flat. It's been trading in a range, right? And so you've got Bitcoin that's trading in a range, and people are like, well, all these Bitcoin companies are buying Bitcoin. Why isn't Bitcoin mooning? Well, if you look at it and you break down the math, these guys, they have every when they buy Bitcoin, their intention is not to move the price, because they want to stack as much Bitcoin as possible. So they're programmatically buying Bitcoin to not affect the price, right? And then everyone else who was on the margin, who was affecting the price in previous cycles, is now trying to buy these treasury companies. And if you look at the volatility in the treasury companies, you get some, like especially the early ones, it'll go up 100% in a day and then down 50% in a day. So the volatility has shifted from Bitcoin to the treasury companies. Now, the simplest way that I've got to explain the danger in Bitcoin treasury companies is that the two things that they require to succeed are attention, so people need to know about them, and fiat currency. They need injections of fiat currency. So if the dumb money like us, retail, isn't putting our fiat currency into one of these treasury companies, they can't buy more Bitcoin, especially if they're just a Bitcoin treasury company, right? And they've got no other way to raise cash or capital. We have to be putting our capital into them for them to be making money. Or then you've got companies that are more mature that do what MicroStrategy do and go out and do collateralized bonds and preferred stock, etc. But either way, they need money going into them in order to buy more Bitcoin, right? And so you've got this influx at the moment with all these smaller ones that are starting out that are basically selling their stock to retail, to whoever's got a demand for it, in order to buy Bitcoin. If that stops, then and they're trading at a premium to their Bitcoin, that premium is going to get smashed. Now, one of the things that I've seen recently is you got a bunch of Bitcoin OGs, maximalists, that are getting hired at these companies to kind of promote the company, right? That's what's happening. And when you see Saylor promote his company that he built, or you see Musk promoting the company they built, it makes sense, right? They're going to try and pump the company they built. But then you've got now these hired guns that are coming in to try to promote a company in order to get people to invest so they can buy more Bitcoin. The more and more of that comes in, you know, I just think it creates a risk when Bitcoin enters a bear market. You know, it could be a little bit of like a game of musical chairs, where that's when these smart guys, these hedge fund guys that know how to crush a stock, will come in and short sell that stock and put pressure on that stock in order to bring it back below NAV, right? But they'll wait till Bitcoin goes in a, you know, 3-month downtrend to do it.
Yeah, like I've been with Tony, as you guys know, in Athens. He's the ultimate Bitcoin maxi, right? He said, if you play fiat games, you get fiat prizes. This is what he said. And he said, you know, when you go into a Bitcoin treasury company, you are introducing a whole range of counterparty risks. You know, like I've had people DM me going, what was the ticket code of that, you know, like the blockchain group in Europe, who I was super impressed with the speaker. And I'm like, I'll give you the ticker code if you've read the Bitcoin Standard. Have you read the Bitcoin Standard? No. I'm like, okay, so you don't even read a book for 7 hours on what Bitcoin is, but you're going to punch all this money into Bitcoin treasuries because it's just like the future equals the past. It's like, no, that's the number one thing in financial advice. The future does not always equal the past. So it's important.
And I think, and don't get me wrong, like some of my biggest positions at the moment are in Bitcoin treasury companies, right? Like I'm still medium to long-term bullish on Bitcoin treasury companies, but you have to really know what you're investing in, right? Like you are investing in not just the management's ability to continue to grow their Bitcoin quicker than you could grow your Bitcoin, because ultimately that's what you want, right? For you to succeed long-term with a Bitcoin treasury company, you want them to be able to grow their stack quicker than what you could. And Adam, that's why you've done so well with MicroStrategy, because you identified 18 months ago that he was going to be able to do that, and you've made 3,000% on your money or whatever it is, 1,000%, right? But like you said, the past doesn't always equal the future, and there's other things that they can't control, right, which is the capital going into those companies. So, you know, there's a lot of people jumping in on the newest ones, but it's just important. I'm not saying don't buy Bitcoin treasury companies. I'm not saying don't research it. I'm not saying don't get involved. But, you know, I always try and go both ways on this and understand the risk.
You make a good point there, you know, and as we both heard from this morning on those videos, when Bitcoin hits a bear market, right now it's all sunshine and rainbows. When are you, and it's starting to be a few murmurs around, you know, we had a discussion on pod when the taxi driver is telling you you're getting a Bitcoin, it's trying to head for the doors. Where are you, you know, mentally thinking that this thing has got some legs in this? Because you hear other crypto maxis. They talk about, oh, the alt season's ready to come, alt season's ready to come. But that usually comes off the back of Bitcoin's dominance evaporating somewhat, but it's just been stagnant. So what's your take on it all? How far is the bull run to go if it is a bull run? There's not in the treasuries.
I think there's three. I think there's three. Like, let's just look at Bitcoin hitting its all-time highs, and there's three potential scenarios. The first potential scenario is that we've topped, and that we are gonna, you know, muck around a little bit like this up and down, and then we'll roll over into August or whatever. I don't give that scenario a high percentage. That would be the first scenario. The second scenario would be that it peaks out sometime between now and October, November, or December in the end of the year. That's when historically it has peaked out in its fourth year of the cycle. So sometime between October and December. And then the third scenario is that, given that everything that's been going on with the election, interest rates, a lot of the macro stuff that's going on, that the liquidity cycle has probably been pushed out a little bit into 2026 because Trump and the Republicans are going to want to get re-elected in the midterms. So they're going to probably try and keep the stock market and asset prices elevated into mid next year. So I would probably give that the highest probability rating, that, you know, sometime into the middle of next year, I think we'd be getting quite stretched on the global liquidity scale. And that, you know, if we get any kind of blow off into the end of the year, you'd want to be taking some lifestyle chips off the table for sure, if you're all in. But, you know, that could change, right? Like the news and the headlines every day are changing, and it's so dynamic. But, you know, I would think that the cycle's probably been extended a little bit, and it'll be sometime in the first half of 2026.
And do shitcoins going to run? Is there an altcoin season, or is that a thing of the past, in your view?
I think when things get crazy, and, you know, Bitcoin does have a blow off, or just what people do, because people are humans, have human nature tendencies, they'll just go further and further out the risk curve. So as this starts to happen, people will start to buy some of these shitcoins, and they'll run. But I don't know if it'll be like a full blown alt season like in the past. I think, and I also think it's going to be a lot more short lived if it does happen.
I got some questions. Are you done with that, James?
Oh, just say one other question. On the hysteria, I suppose you call it. Everyone's storming into these treasuries and whatnot. But another announcement that we haven't had in Australia just came through earlier this week. Is one of these blockchain lenders, Blockerno, has now just announced BTC backed home loans up at 60% LVR, which, you know, if you're a big Bitcoin maxi and you go in there and you lever up on Bitcoin to buy the home, which would be your leverage, it could be a quite an ugly outcome on that pullback. That's why I sort of set up what do you think of the markets?
So just on that, right, like at the end of the day, whether it be Bitcoin treasury companies, whether it be people doing Bitcoin lending, whatever it is, the reality is those people want your Bitcoin, right? Totally. And so sometimes like people like the OGs and the maxis say the best thing is to just custody your own Bitcoin, have your own keys, don't leverage it, don't lend it, just keep it. That's your insurance policy. And I think there's some truth in that. If you are going to start getting cute, you know, do it with a very small percentage of your portfolio, especially if you're not skilled in trading or understanding macro timing. Because eventually, really, everyone else really just wants your Bitcoin.
Mm. Where did I hear it? That, you know, like the whole thing with Bitcoin being Bitcoin, but as soon as you start introducing these different instruments, you're starting to be pulling back in the fiat currency, right? Not just the Bitcoin. Now you're playing the fiat currency game as well. So you're introducing that back into the mix. And that's the whole thing that people are talking about that is broken. So why bring something that's broken and everyone's talking about it as broken back into the mix of something that here's so good? That's my mindset. I don't know if it was you that mentioned it into a pod, Adam, or someone, but I'm not sure who it was, but yeah, it's interesting.
I have some thoughts on some of this stuff, James, because I think this time, you know, these are words I say, very aware of what I'm saying. This time, I think it is different. There are some distinct differences with where the world is now with this whole cryptocurrency space and where it has been in the past. Like, as a Bitcoiner has been around this for a while now, you know, maybe 8 years. If you told me 2-3 years ago, some of the things that have happened in the last 2-3 years around Bitcoin specifically, you wouldn't believe it. You know, like the US government is now talking about a Bitcoin strategic reserve and only a Bitcoin strategic reserve. Banks.
I don't think that'll happen.
No, but just even the fact that they've got a guy in the White House, David Sacks, talking about this stuff, right? I think they'll just not sell. But there are other people saying that they are engineering ways right now to build a Bitcoin strategic reserve as long as it doesn't cost taxpayers money, yet to be seen. But banks lending money against Bitcoin, like or custodying Bitcoin, or I just think you can't underestimate the amount of brand building that has occurred in the last couple of years for Bitcoin specifically. It's phenomenal. Jeff Booth would say that we're seeing the protocol wars being won, as in, you know, like it took, you know, 15, 16 years before we decided on WWW as the protocol to run the internet. But once that protocol war was won and Bitcoin is a protocol upon which everything else will be built, and you're starting to see this in these lending products and so on. But you are, you know, as Eric said, you're introducing all of these other fiat things where there's leverage and margin and all these things that are built on top that brings risk into it.
Can I ask you a question, Adam? Can I ask you a question about what you just said? Because I'm a staunch believer in Bitcoin. I feel like I fundamentally understand the reasons behind why it is here, why it was created, and why it will succeed. Right, but what did Bitcoin top at last cycle? 69K?
Mm-hmm.
69K. If I had said to you at 69K last cycle, hey, in 2025, you're going to have a president that has endorsed Bitcoin. You're going to have MSTR that has 600,000 Bitcoin. You're going to have treasury companies adopting Bitcoin like crazy. All the things that you've got on your rap sheet that has basically happened that shifted the Overton window to where it is now. If I said to you, what do you think the price of Bitcoin will be in 2025? And I asked you that at 2021 peak, what would you have said, right?
Yeah, much
more than 108,000.
It feels like it's considerably underpriced at the moment relative to the macro shifts that has happened in the space. And, you know, I've been really thinking about why that is. There's people rotating out of direct Bitcoin ownership into ETFs. There's people like this week, what was all over the press was the guy who moved $1 billion worth of Bitcoin that he's hodled since the beginning. Rumor is it's Roger Ver, and that's pretty much as soon as I sat down with Tony in Athens, he said, yeah, that's Roger. He's just moving some Bitcoin. And but he did it in one move. He didn't even send a $100 test transaction. He hasn't moved this shit in like since the beginning. And he just goes and moves $1 billion like that without a test. He didn't even send, like, what? Normally it's $1,000 just to make sure that the address is right and it's being received, not just boom, like OG.
But did Tony have anything else to say about that? Because if it is Roger Ver, he's currently in Mallorca. And the US is trying to get him extradited back to the US to face criminal charges. So, it's kind of just blown over, right? Like, is he doing a deal with Trump? Like, I'm of the belief that there's a more than zero chance that, I mean, here's tinfoil hat shit for you. I'm of the belief there's a more than 0% chance that the US government will eventually take over MSTR, and that maybe one of the games at play is that they're trying to get the rest of the world to stockpile gold, while they let private citizens stockpile Bitcoin in the US, and then they basically take over a private company. Becomes state owned, right?
Oh, yeah.
So they take over MSTR and they basically have the largest Bitcoin holdings in the world, and then that becomes like a neutral reserve currency. Like, that can happen. That there's a precedent like in World War times where they took over private companies.
It's a very interesting thought experiment because, you know, it is I've read some of that stuff around there as well. But again, they can't duplicate it. But I think Roger's probably got a piper to pay somewhere. And right. So he's gotta pay that piper, you know.
If anyone's gonna get pardoned, I mean you've got some the pirate Roberts getting pardoned who had the Silk Road selling heroin to kids. So I mean it wouldn't be unthinkable for Ver to get pardoned by Trump.
Well, to be clear, right, he wasn't. People did it on the platform. He was completely impartial, just to be clear about him as an operator.
Well, enable people to sell heroin to kids then.
He was a free speech absolutist, right? Like it's like Elon with X. There's some horrendous shit on X, but we need X, right? We need those platforms, those inaudible. That's why Nostra is blowing up and why people are, you know, super interested in a decentralized social platform. And, you know, it's, things are moving.
I've got a question from Mark, probably to end the pod, just some constructive stuff that people can take with them. And I see some of the questions you ask in the chats that we're in. So when you're looking at Bitcoin treasury companies, Mark, and you're researching them, what are some of the questions? What are some of the things that you're looking for that other people can do when they're doing their own research? Because it's good saying do your due diligence and do your research, but what are some key things that they should be looking out for?
Yeah, well, I mean, to give you an example, right? Like if you look at Metaplanet, today Metaplanet just announced that they bought another 2,000 or 3,000 Bitcoin and the stock basically didn't move, right? And I think the reason that the stock didn't move is because in the short term, sometimes the fundamentals have nothing to do with where the price of the stock actually is. Like if you look at Metaplanet, it was like $100 Japanese currency and then it went up to like 1,500 in Japanese currency. And basically what happened is it had that big parabola, that blow off, and now the price is consolidating, right? So I think one of the most important things is to have a basic understanding of technical analysis. And if you don't, to grab the charts and put them into ChatGPT and understand where it is in its pricing cycle, because all stocks, all everything that ticks goes through like four phases. It's like the basing phase, it's like the growth phase, the leveling out phase, and then the downward phase, right? And so just knowing where it is on its pricing phase cycle, because a lot of what's happening with these treasury companies, the forward performance is being priced in and then they're going out and living up to it. So for example, Smarter Web Company had a valuation of $1 billion and they only had something like 300 Bitcoin. It's like Semler Scientific was priced at 600 million and they had 4,000. So the market is not being rational or logical there. They're pricing this Smarter Web Company on the promise that they're going to continue to buy more Bitcoin. So just understanding, the main things to understand is where is it in its short-term price movements? Like where is it? Has it just had a blow off? Is it about to run? How much Bitcoin do they actually have versus what their market cap is minus debt, so their MNAV? Their multiple of net asset value. And then if you're going to invest in these companies long-term, right, which is what I want to do as well as trade the short-term, I think you really have to understand not just whoever their Bitcoin spokesperson is. You need to understand that the people that are calling the shots and making all the calls at the company, like Saylor at MicroStrategy, like Simon Gerovich at Metaplanet, you need to understand their backgrounds and how they operate. And you want to get an understanding of not just what they say their intentions are, but the vehicles that they're going to use to be able to raise that capital. And then you want to see that price action is kind of aligning with what they're saying they're going to do. Because there's a lot of companies talking a big game at the moment, but their price going down, 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 down. Mm. Like you saw Pomp released a Bitcoin treasury company or is a Bitcoin treasury SPAC, and it kind of did a spike. And then it's just gone down for 3 weeks. It's like the market, GameStop is another one, right? Like I had a hunch on GameStop, and then you know, I had to really understand the CEO and see what he was doing and listen to what he was saying. And you kind of have to like read their minds a little bit and be like, this guy's not serious about taking it all the way. And so you really have to bet on management.
This is the reason why I asked the question, right? Because, or else what you'll get and what Adam will get and I'll get is, you know, what was that stock? What was that stock name again? What was that ticker symbol again?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like this, these are the questions. This is the, what Mark does, just, he doesn't just sit there looking at charts, placing trades. Like he does deep, deep research, right? That is where the work is involved, right? Like what Adam is doing, what Mark is doing, like James, like I know James for the last probably month to 6 weeks, right? Has been heavy in that chat. He was quiet and now he's heavy because he's the one putting in the videos. He's the one putting in the work now, right? And this is the thing, that's where the work is involved. And that's why like I want to ask you what these questions are so people can start going, oh shit, I don't even know who the CEO of Metaplanet is. You know what I mean? Who are these people, right? What is Michael Saylor's background as an example? Go and do the work,
yeah,
right? Because he's got a background before Bitcoin. Who are these people? How smart are these people? And I think it's very, very important that people, you know, start digging.
Especially with Bitcoin treasury companies, like you need to be able to see into the future. You need to, if the worst case scenario is to unfold, you need to be able to judge how that CEO is going to respond. Yeah.
Well, the first thing, if I were to go, hey guys, all right, right, come invest with me. I've got a development that's going to make X amount. What's the first thing you're going to ask? What have you done? Show me the paper, right? Show me the receipts of what you've done. And this is the thing that people need to start doing with these public companies, even betting in the Teslas and the Woodside Energies and all these different types of stocks that are out there. Who's running these companies? Because it's a big, like Krispy Kreme at the moment. I've been researching them because their stock literally has lost 60%, you know, within the last, I think it's about 12 months, right? Why? And I was like, I just asked ChatGPT. I'm like, why has this happened? I just seen an article. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. Why? Right? They've lost big deals. They've changed management. They've lost the McDonald's contract. I'm like, this all makes sense now, right?
It's not that hard, guys, these days, you know, like to do that research as well. Like if, like just talking about Saylor, there's a really good interview with Jordan Peterson and Michael Saylor, which is kind of cool that you can watch. And Jordan was one of the first people to actually dig into Saylor's personal background and his motivations and where he is as a human being. It was really revealing.
Adam, just on the Saylor interview, he quoted lessons of history in that interview, which is an 11 part volume that took 40 or 60 years to create, written by Will Durant, and it goes through the history of civilization, history of civilization, whatever. And I went out and it cost me $1,000 US to buy that set, The Lessons of Civilization. And I'm going to go and read from start to finish all those books to try and get into the head of Saylor and these other people, the Austrian economists, because he mentioned in that interview that is the theme that keeps coming back is hard money, hard money, hard money. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I want to understand what's happened over 1,000 years of history so that I can predict the future, right? That's how deep you got to really want to go if you're going to put all this money into it.
That's the only reason that Michael Saylor has not only, you know, put everything he has into it, but taken everything he can from others to put into it as well. It comes from deep, deep work and conviction, right? So watch the Jordan Peterson interview with Michael Saylor and use Michael as the benchmark. When you hear, if you're interested in, like I've mentioned Tobam and I've mentioned, you know, the blockchain group, if you don't know who the CEO is and you haven't seen the cut of their jib and you haven't watched them be interviewed on stage and scrutinized on a panel, you shouldn't invest, because at the end of the day, a company is just a logo. That the actual energy, the spiritual heart of the business is a person. And so when I'm interested in investing with Tobam in Paris at the moment, I'm going through their onboarding, but I actually saw Yves, who's the CEO and chairman, speak. I watched a bunch of interviews of him to find out his backstory on who he is. And then I met him at Bitcoin Prague and talked to him face to face and eyeballed the guy and got a sense for who he was. now I'm interested. And you try to do that agnostic of the share price. Eric Semler is another one of those guys I watched speak on stage in Paris, and I watched him speak on stage in Prague, and I went and met the guy, right? And I get a really solid feeling about Eric Semler as a person. I could be wrong, but at least I know who is the guy behind this and the way he thinks and where he's from and what his background is. And then you look at Paris, then you look at the blockchain group, and I don't know as much about that particular guy, but it's a very young guy running and driving that business. So if you really want to learn this stuff, there's a tool I sent to just one other thing before I move on to just one tool and we'll wind it up. You got to look in Bitcoin, we call it signal. What is the signal? Like when we went to Prague, the first thing I went up to Tony and he was had his big Bitcoin way stand there. And I said, "How are you feeling, man?" He goes, "You know, the signal's strong here. You can feel it." It's almost like they're talking about the force in Star Wars. But he means every year I've been here, we've exhibited, and this year there's more people. The vibe's different. All the shitcoin shitcoin companies have been banned. They don't let shitcoin our companies in. It's just Bitcoin only. Says the signal is strong. What he's looking for is the overall vibe. I sent you guys a photo, I think, in the chat group, of Mark Moss, who's a big YouTuber out of the US. And it was a photo that he put on his Instagram account, which most people wouldn't have really paid too much attention to. But it was him at the table, a private dinner in Prague. There was only 8 people at the table. And I'm like, okay, Michael Saylor's at the table. Mark Moss is at the table. Who else is at the table? And I told you guys, there's Yves, there's Semler, there's the CEO of the blockchain group of Europe. That is something that you've got to look for, because you're like, can you imagine the conversation that would have unfolded with Michael Saylor, who took $1 billion to $100 billion in 5 years? Like, that's where shit happens. And more interestingly, who's not at the table? Who was in Bitcoin Prague that didn't get a seat at that table, right? What other Bitcoin treasury CEOs could have been there but weren't, right? So this is the kind of stuff that you really start to look at and you start to pay attention to. There's a website called strategytracker.com. You can look it up. I gave it to Mark just this week. And it basically has the top Bitcoin strategy companies, and it shows them side by side with all the key metrics that you need to understand if you're going to invest in treasury companies: MNAV, net asset value, debt levels, instruments, and it's got all of it there like a dashboard and a panel. It's free. Get that there and go to ChatGPT, and you would be amazed if you just dedicated 2 or 3 full days to watching content and just drilling in with ChatGPT until you understand the way these things work. You will be so far ahead of people. My dad, you know, he's been a school teacher in a public system, not a school teacher, but he worked taught in TAFE, and only ever made modest money. Grew a net worth at one point to about $8 to $10 million when it was a lot of money. I'm talking 20 years ago, investing in gold companies. But my dad would invest based on who was on the board, not anything else. He would just follow the executives around the world, and that's how he built a fortune. And he lost it all in a crash.
I think what you're right saying there as well. I'm having bought and sold stocks and having involved in education companies years ago. This terminology and the metrics used are completely brand new. They're like 6 months old, effectively. So if you've even bought and sold stocks or traded options, you go to Strategy Tracker, which is great, and for one, and then the other ones, find out what the key indicator or key metrics are, and drop them into ChatGPT and go explain it like I'm a dummy. What are these, and how do they interact with each other? And spend a couple of hours and actually understand it. Still taking my time to get my head around how these metrics actually work and what it actually means when MNAV's fucking this and it correlates. It's like it's a whole new language. And you got to understand it, otherwise it's just going to go straight over your head and you're going to be gambling.
I'm doing that. Yeah.
I was just saying, Mark, you know, you put that one thing in your video, I think it was in Money Market Mayhem, about Semler, and saying Semler's MNAV versus other MNAV, and you just look at it and go, they have a shitload more coin, and they're valued, their multiple based on the value of their coin is just so much lower right now than others. That alone is a piece of information that most people just don't understand, but it's a really powerful metric that they own a shitload of the underlying asset. But this is where that fiat prizes, fiat games comment Tony made, is that over here, there's this company that has this tiny little stack of Bitcoin that's trading at a massive multiple. Why might that be? Because they might have Tony Robbins as their fucking spokesperson.
Yeah. Right? We talk about attention is the currency, right? And at the end of the day, if they're pumping and they got faces and they're pumping, that's valued into the stock price. We've seen it over and over. Look at Prime, the drink,
right? It's doing this at the moment, right? But at the beginning, it was pump, pump, pump. Every single, right, famous person was on it. And it was like Mark nailed it, right? That stuff is priced into it already.
That's the
price into the future.
That's the part of Bitcoin. Bitcoin's an immutable ledger. It's an energy network. It doesn't care about any of this stuff. You can't manipulate that, but you can manipulate by adding influence.
So just one a tool I picked up during the week to expedite the, you can sit there and watch an hour long or a 45-minute long podcast or whatever it may be, and taking notes madly, and you're getting lost in all the weeds of it all, and you're too busy and you're scrambling, rewinding, carrying on. Watch them if you must. But what I've found is cool is an app called Tactic, TACTIQ. Download it. It's free. As you put it in your Chrome browser, you just drop a YouTube. Instead of having to copy and paste a transcript, you just grab the link and it transcribes the whole thing in like a nanosecond. You just drop it straight into GPT and go, explain this for dummies. And in 2 minutes, you pretty much absorbed an hour's worth of information.
Wow.
And, 2 minutes, 10 minutes. If you go back and read through it, then ask it specific questions. So anytime I get a YouTube video now, because time's short, I just grab it. If I'm interested in it, bank it and go, right, I've got 5 videos, Tactic, bang, transcription, into a new chat in GPT, Tactic, SRAM, and it just really shortens up the learning curve massively.
What is it, James? T-I-T?
T-A-C-T-I-Q.
T-A-C-T-I-Q, so Tactic. Free as, and they got a whole bunch of AI stuff in there. I just use it to transcribe YouTube videos because Mark said to me a while ago, he gets the transcriptions of videos. And I thought, I can sit there, copy and paste it. Just grab this bit of kit, whack it in there, and like, it cuts down, as I said, 45 minutes into 3 minutes of reading time. Then what, are you going to question it or not?
Does it transcribe any other videos?
Not the ones you're into, Eric. No.
I don't need transcribing.
They're short enough.
They're short enough. It barely gets through the intro.
Eric, how do you transcribe?
I saw a comedian, and she said this woman, she said, you know, she was an old lady. She said, I don't know how people get by these days, you know, and keep their partners happy. She goes, back in the day, you know, with the VHS tapes, you know, and you'd find your husband's porn stash. And if you wanted to know what he was into, you'd just find the tape and you'd back it up 30 seconds. That's it. That's what he's into.
Or the power goes, you've been stretched so much. Rewind for it.
Back it up 10 seconds. There it is. I'm fucking lost now. It's all digital. I don't know what the fuck he's into.
I mean, people out there, we talk GPT all day. For other people out there that don't use GPT all day, it's just much the same as an article. Like, I even get articles. I've got ADHD. I lose concentration pretty quick when a bird flies past. So I just grab the link to the article and just summarize it. And I learned after 1 year, bang, it breaks it straight down much faster.
You know what I'd love? I'd love, you know, for one pod, James, because
Mark's the
easy
guy.
It's easy to say it, or even Mark, right, is for half an hour, 20 minutes, do a live of, okay, I'm breaking this down and this is what I actually do. Bang, 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 just to actually show people. Because saying it is one thing, but when people can physically see you on a shared screen going, all right, I'm going to learn today about Metaplanet and this is what I would do. All right, I would take this. I would take this information. I would put it here. Then I would ask it this question. I think that would be very, very, very powerful. And if you think that's good, in the comments, let us know if you would like to do something like that.
Let's do it like this. I will consider like doing the way I do it, or James, you tell me if you back it up. If we get enough love in the comments for a particular stock or for a particular thing that gets like upvoted strong enough that it's like, we'll spend half an hour actually deep diving into it, but it's got to be right. Like, you guys are going to be shouting for it in the comments.
So I suppose so.
So if you like, even pick a topic. If you wanted to learn about X, Y, and Z, what would be your first port of call? It'd be, you know, YouTube, and drop it in, and then get break it right down. And get here's the summary of it, and time it as well.
Tell us which one, and then like the comments you like the most.
Done.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Just to close it up, just want to say, you know, for those of you, this is all too complicated. You know, just remember, if you're just holding Bitcoin, it's not a bad thing to do. Look at the Bitcoin University. And with Bitcoin, it's 10 days a year, as Tom Lee says, where if you're out of the market for those 10 days, you miss all the upside. So just be patient. You know, it feels like it's going nowhere, nowhere, nowhere. And then all of a sudden, boom, price discovery, new. base is built, just how it works. So guys, with that said, hopefully you are enjoying the pods. If you are, let us know in the comments. But like Mark said, if there's something you want Mark to do a deep dive in, or any of us, drop it below and then like the ones that you like the most and we'll look at it.
And tell me the Freedom Summit, Adam. What days and where can people find it?
It's next week. So it's on 15, 16, 17 from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Sydney time. 6 p.m., 9 p.m. The number one question we get is it going to be recorded if I can't make all the sessions? The answer is yes. Please try to book before the weekend, though, because we're going to close it out then. To get a ticket, it is unemployable.com.au/freedom. We have over 350 registered attendees. We've raised $170,000 for charity as a result, because all of the money, 100%, goes to charity, not one cent goes to us. And we've got some incredible speakers. So the people in Indonesia are beside themselves. The John Forster Foundation is like, holy shit, like 170,000 from the unemployable community in 2 weeks of promotion. So thank you guys, really appreciate it. But come and join us. It's going to be an amazing event.
Awesome.
Okay. With that said, guys, that is it for this week. See you guys next week. Bye for now. Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.